Welcome back to Cogumentative, a show where men with a penchant for chicken samosas, grapes, and chips get together on a Thursday night to talk about cars and all things automotive. I'm your host, Thomas Faulkner from the Sunday Times, and as usual, I'm joined by
Mark Paluta,
Mike Salomon,
and I'm Rafid.
Guys, good to have you back in the studio. It's been a while.
It's your pleasure.
Oh, thank you very much. Pleasure's all mine.
It's nice to see you. And I think this room needs it. We've got a little bit of sadness. We've got Doc who's a little depressed.
He's grumpy.
We tried to cheer you up with a hug.
Yeah, didn't really work. 40 grand would be better.
Oh, Tom. Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk about cars.
Yeah, let's talk about the news, guys. Here's something that you folks will like because you all love passion. And Alfa Romeo.
We all love passion.
You do.
Okay.
You all love passion and passionate cars.
We like Italian cars.
And as you know,
Italian cars are passionate.
Are the only people that can make passionate cars.
Absolutely.
Alfa Romeo Tonale concept. Did you guys see that?
Did see it.
It's
gorgeous.
The second.
It's like the Stelvio replacement.
No.
I think
it's joining Stelvio.
Oh, it's smaller.
And it's going to be. When every other manufacturer is bringing out all electric cars, Alfa's finally caught up, and they've now given us a plug-in hybrid.
Fantastic. Mm. That's great.
But the front end looks very reminiscent of the 159 and the Brera.
Yeah, it's got a Brera.
With a multiple headlight.
Yeah. Very pretty, huh?
I actually haven't seen it.
But whether it makes it into production or not. Well, it is going to be – it isn't. It is going to make production in the
maybe not in that
2020,
format.
But not in that format.
I actually thought it looked a lot like the SZ.
Oh yeah, those two.
The one that Matthew Barnes said was made in a shed.
That's right.
It probably was.
Well, speaking of that, we can talk about cars made in a shed and Italian cars at the same time.
Oh yeah,
Morgan.
Nice segue.
Morgan.
Wow. Morgan. Yeah.
Okay. Morgan was bought
three
by Italians.
People in a shed have sold to an Italian company, an Italian consortium who used to own Ducati, apparently.
So that means they're swapping out wooden chassis for Italian marble.
Exactly. So what? It's like. Nadav, you're the expert on all things Morgan, but it was one of the last family-owned car manufacturers, correct?
Yeah, so Morgan's 110 years old. We've mentioned it before. The brand is 110 years old, family-owned all the way to today, and then this week, after the announcement of the Plus 6, which is the brand new Morgan released at Geneva, they also announced that they've been bought out. The majority of the stake was bought out by an Italian consortium, who also has currently interests in Ducati and Aston Martin, but not majority interests in these companies. So
they're just
clear
venture capitalists.
You're right. So it's not clear if this company is any good or not, as far as I understand it. It's not what their influence is. Isn't clear.
But are they moneyed? Because I think that in any car,
it's all about the money.
Car business, so having access to capital is the big thing.
Right. So this is pure conjecture, but the way I read the situation is that this deal was signed years ago, maybe a year or two, because to develop something like the Plus 6, which was a brand new chassis with a new engine, and get it all developed and tested, etc., costs big money.
Mm. And they also they also bought back their custom experience center or something, and they bought one of their old workshops back as well. So,
I think so. There's been a bit of
cash injection.
So I feel like there's been some cash lying around. Probably what happened was there's a shared risk between the family shareholders and this new potential shareholder in the R&D of this car. And with a positive Geneva announcement, there was good reception to the car. I think they decided that they would go ahead and release the news, and they're going to be looking for a return, presumably. So hopefully it means big things for the brand.
Is it true that the internal code name for the new Morgan is the Morgan Supra?
but I think,
more the Z4 would be more correct.
We would have to go and see whether this thing actually happens or not, because, you've got like TVR, which was supposedly rescued a few years back.
By some Russians.
Still haven't seen a car come out yet.
Yeah.
Even though they put one on display at one of the car
things. They sold them, but they've never actually appeared, I think. Yeah.
And in Italian car circles, this has happened over a number of years. I mean, Lamborghini got shunted around forever and then eventually found its way to Audi.
Chrysler before that.
The difference being that this is a functional and supposedly profitable company for the last 2 years at least. So it's not quite the same as picking up from a dormant brand like TVR. This is a functional, supposedly profitable brand. Well, so well, hopefully it's positive. I don't know.
Good luck.
Let's try they're still trying to deliver their 1964 order book.
Exactly.
I believe the waiting list is 6 months official.
So British car is being bought out by the Italians.
Yeah.
Segues nicely into a British car that was bought by Indians.
Oh, Jaguar.
And that is Jaguar.
Jaguar.
Do you know what I drove earlier this week? The new Jaguar I-Pace.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, really?
I went on the launch.
Was my phone off?
Yeah. I mean, well, you didn't guys, hear anything. You know, was this during your sulky period where you were totally offline?
Sulking correct. The whole week, so we didn't know about it.
I was sulking. How was it?
Very, very impressive car. I mean, I've driven electric cars before, obviously.
Yeah.
As I'm a professional, I've driven.
As a professional.
I would imagine so. I-3s, Mini-Es. But this this is the most convincing electric car that I've driven. There's no range anxiety.
So is it going to be sold locally already?
It is already. Yeah.
You can go
so
on to just under 2 million.
So what infrastructure have they got for powering your car? Other people's houses?
Okay, so basically,
it's not a hybrid. It's full electric.
It's full electric,
and it's good looking.
It's good looking.
What's the range?
It doesn't look like an electric car. It's got elements of like XE and F Type and F Pace. It's a good looking car.
What's the range?
The range is claimed 470 kilometers.
On a single charge. That's amazing.
And Harry Smith, they're setting up charge stations, so you'll be able to quick charge while you go into the Wimpy there. But
it's
just
called,
a question, what's it like weight-wise?
Because it's very heavy, but all electric cars are heavy because batteries are dense and they take up a lot of space. So this is 2.2 tons, okay?
Sure.
Which is, it is a lot of car.
And does it feel it?
No. It feels...
it's very low.
It is incredibly fast. Mm. I mean, you... if
but
you put
cornering
your foot
wise,
down,
I mean,
no. Well, the weight is in the batteries, which they obviously keep very low in the car.
Yeah, so it's so low down between the axles. And we did a Gymkhana course with this car, and I thought, this is going to be a bit. But it actually, for what it is, it's very nimble, turns in very well.
Interesting.
And even out on the road, it's fun, it's enjoyable. I mean, you can fling it around. We went down the R511, which has recently been reserviced, and it was fantastic and so fast.
I don't have a big problem with the I-Pace other than the price point.
Mm.
Is it 2 million rand? Is it 2 million rand's worth? In terms of interior quality.
Is it 2 million rand?
Yeah. 2 million rand?
No. It's 1.6. It starts at 1.6.
But
you must equate it.
You still have to buy the batteries.
You must compare.
Does that include batteries included?
Batteries included. But you must compare it to a similarly spec'd,
what?
An F-Pace, a...
but that's half the price.
A Jaguar, a Land Rover.
Evoque.
And a, no,
is
no.
It,
what size
what
is
does it compare to, exactly? In size, in luxury?
It seems like mid-size. I've stood next to one.
Yeah,
we've seen one in person, but it's hard to sort of convey the interior dimensions from the exterior. And it's also hard to place it in terms of where it would stand on a sort of luxury premium.
Is it
an XJ?
It feels to me,
or is it an XE or an XF?
It feels quite Velar-like.
Oh,
okay.
In sort of space.
How much it can't be far off in weight. I mean, the Velar is probably a heavy car.
Yeah,
but the Velar is a lot cheaper.
It starts at 800.
Yeah, it does.
Look, battery technology isn't coming cheap. The cars that get imported because they are EVs, they get slapped with a massive import tax as well.
That makes no sense.
Well, because they're not drinking petrol, so the government can't squeeze out more tax from the fuel they use, et cetera. So it is expensive, yes. But when you look at it as a whole, as a car, it's an amazing piece of engineering. And it is properly quick. I mean, you'll need something very fast
to keep up
with this thing.
Does Jaguar South Africa feel like they're happy with the price point at launch?
I don't think they were. I mean, but it is.
Where do you think it should be? A million?
Yeah, just over.
Yeah, no, I think it offers comparable performance to a Velar. Why should it not be similar?
It's faster than a lot of things. I mean, it'll do 0-100 in 4.8 seconds. It's quick. It's very, very quick. So, yeah, the most convincing electric car I've driven could be your primary car if you've got the cash. More passion, Italian. Pininfarina Battista. Did you guys see that? All electric. Again, 1,420 kilowatts of power, 0 to 300 in 12 seconds.
That's amazing.
Acclaimed maximum speed of 400.
In 12 seconds. I mean, just to put it in context, the Speedtail, the McLaren Speedtail, quotes that in 13 seconds.
Yeah, it's faster than the Speedtail.
Yeah, but it's electric, so you get all that power and all that torque the moment you hit. There's nothing to spool. There's nothing spooling or pressure building up or gearboxes thinking. It just sends it all down to the ground.
Yeah, I think that the big thing is managing to do that all the way up to that high top speed. So electric motors are normally good for the first, say, 200 k's an hour. After that, they would need another gear, and that doesn't.
So this is where Pininfarina, no longer part of Ferrari, or at least the official...
They were just the designer, weren't they?
The designer, but now they're producing their own cars.
Yeah.
It looks distinctly like a 458, 488. So I'd assume that they've used the underpinnings of that.
Well, the new... F8 Tributo looks exactly like a 488, so they all look the same.
Yeah.
It's a cool-looking car.
It is
cool-looking. It. They're only building 150 of these things.
No, it's fantastic.
And do you guys know how much it's going to cost?
€1 million.
Yes. I can't work that out because I failed maths and I can't.
Is it in rands?
I converted it.
To rands?
It took me a whole day.
15 million rand?
No. Between 28 and 35 million rand.
Yeah.
But if you think that's expensive... Did you guys see the world's most expensive new car was announced?
Yeah. The new Bugatti
La Voiture Noire.
Correct. I'm glad you can say it because I can't.
Which I will say that.
Have you been practicing
that in the last? I'm a man of many skills. But I will say this in terms of car naming, we've literally gotten to the end. I mean, it's the La Ferrari, the Ferrari, and the black car. I mean, they're terrible names.
176 million rand.
Who is it sold to?
I don't know.
Ferdinand P.
Is it?
Pierre.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Grandson, nephew of Ferdinand Porsche.
Yeah.
We're in the wrong business, guys.
The one-off was sold to him.
Yeah, apparently Dieselgate wasn't so bad for him, eh?
No, exactly.
I think that was the rumor. I don't know if it's 100% confirmed, but that's
the rumor.
Yeah, that's the rumor.
And it's an homage to a Type 57 Bugatti that was owned
by... The Atlantique. There were four of them built.
And one got lost.
Magnificent.
Yes.
So there's one.
There's a whole story behind it.
People listening, all our listeners, go and look for that car.
So I will read to you, listeners, the story.
Okay.
The two-door Gran Turismo pays homage to the legendary Bugatti Type 57 SC Atlantic of the late 1930s. Founder Ettore Bugatti. Am I saying that right?
No, you're not.
Ettore, you see. Bugatti. Bugatti's son, Jean, correct? Not Jean. Developed and drove... one of only four Type 57 SC Atlantic coupes produced. He called his Atlantic Mike, help me out.
La voiture noire.
The black car. The vehicle disappeared without a trace before the Second World War. Nowadays, it is considered one of the great mysteries in the history of the automobile world and would be incredibly valuable if found.
Yeah. So start looking.
That's what I need to do.
There's a finder's fee.
It is absolutely gorgeous. They say about the old Atlantic.
They say it'll be the most valuable car in the world if that's found. And that's found. Ralph Lauren has one.
That's right.
Yeah. One of the other three.
Oh, okay.
But there's been, I mean, this is the show of the year. Arguably, it's the Geneva show. I mean, there's a lot of stuff to go and see.
Can I talk about my star of the show?
Sure.
The new Koenigsegg.
The what?
Koenigsegg. What is it called? The Jesko?
No, but do you not think that when you say your favorite car, is it not just the most ridiculous wing that's even more ridiculous than the Senna wing?
On the back of that car?
Yeah, it's
just, never mind the wing.
It needs that thing removed.
That car has got so much tech in it, okay, that Christian von Koenigsegg could never mate a double-clutch gearbox to his cars because it couldn't handle the power. So he used to use a single clutch gearbox. He's now gone to a 9-speed 6-clutch gearbox. It's this new invention that they came up with. It's brilliant. It's got solenoids that activates clutches inside the gearbox. It's tiny. It weighs 70 or 80 kilos versus a double clutch, which is over 100 kilos or something like that. Brilliant. The tech in that car is phenomenal. So I think they're leading the way in terms of tech, Koenigsegg, just because of they have no bounds on their creativity.
Yeah, I'm not convinced. Yeah.
Well,
it's inaccessible.
A little never bit point, yeah, pointless.
What do you mean you'll never? Don't give up before you start it, Tom.
Those cars do nothing for me.
Oh, come on.
They're just these whimsical things. I'm with
Tom here. You won't hear it often, but I'm with Tom here.
Whimsical.
Well, I personally think that Aston stole the show.
Yeah, they got some good stuff going on there, too.
Wow. I mean, they really released a whole bunch of stuff all at once. I think the press is actually battling to keep up with the amount of stuff that they released.
Yeah.
Mercedes as well had a
first prototype Valkyrie.
So first prototype, Aston gave us the first real prototype Valkyrie, the AMR RB003, which is going to sort of be the baby Valkyrie, son of Valkyrie. And
which
then,
is going to have approximately 1,000 horsepower.
Yeah. And then there's also a mid-engined Vanquish, so 488 720S direct rival to come into your style.
Well, talking about the 720S, did you see the 720S GT3?
Yeah.
Ooh, that's cool.
Was it the MSO one? No,
this is a proper GT3 car. GT3 I mean, car. It's a racing car.
Yeah. Oh,
I saw something interesting on Instagram today, on the McLaren Instagram. I think I forwarded it to you guys. A McLaren, which looks like it's mid-engined, as they all are, in disguise, but the caption read something like, a GT car that handles like a mid-engine, well, like a handles like a McLaren, which is interesting. So they're going to be building something probably a little bit bigger, a little bit more usable.
Who, McLaren?
Mm?
Oh, because you don't have enough.
Yeah, they're not enough.
Every 10 seconds they launch a new car.
And they all look the same.
No.
It's incredible.
Isn't it amazing? Did you see that Pagani restored their first car, chassis 001?
Yeah.
So that was presented at Geneva on their stand. Isn't it amazing that the Pagani brand is 20 years old this year?
Yeah, that is. Yeah.
Isn't that rock your world? Wow. I think that's amazing. I can't believe it. For us, they're still sort of upstarts, but they've been around for almost three times as long as McLaren.
Actually, there is a car that will appeal to you, Tom. Peugeot have shown a prototype 500 horsepower station wagon.
Yeah, that's cool.
Which looks lovely.
That is nice. But what I liked the most at Geneva was the Honda e-prototype.
I was going to say, this is, that's I can't believe it's taken you.
We discussed it
probably like 12 minutes into this.
We discussed it last week.
Now you're finally mentioning
it. It's cool. It's awesome. It's accessible. It's a car that we all could possibly own. Well, not me. I'll never afford another car again. But you guys could possibly go out and buy an EV. A Honda prototype EV. It's going into production. It's 98%.
Oh, that's cool. It's a very cool looking car.
Yeah.
And it's a Honda. So it probably won't break.
Okay, to wrap.
Rep.
One more thing I'm going to touch on. Did you see Volvo? They are now limiting all their cars to 180 k's an hour.
That's ridiculous. Who does that?
They are limiting all their cars. As of 2020, I think it is.
Even the Polestar stuff?
Everything. They are limiting all cars to 180 out of the factory because they want to make the world a safer place.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that opt out potentially? Can you ask the dealership to remove
no,
that?
No, but I'm sure if you went to Rob Green or you know Revo, you could probably plug
well,
it
no
in.
No one really argued with a German 250.
Well, Mark can do it now. He got one of those readers.
Mark can do it for free.
Yeah, I got an OBD2 scanner. Yeah. Let's plug it in.
Yeah.
Remove that.
Nobody argued with a German 250 km/h blanket speed.
No, because hardly any cars could get there. Now everything gets over 180. It's a little bit. Didn't the Japanese do the same thing?
No, they were theoretically limited to 180. Their speedos only went up to 180.
The first GTR I ever drove in South Africa was limited to 180.
No, it wasn't limited. It just had a speedo. Really?
Yeah, I had a motorbike that wouldn't go above that.
Serious?
Yeah.
That's probably best.
It is best. But that's all we have time for. It's a news segment. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about, well, we're going to unpack why local is lacquer.
Young people are making their mark. Get up.
Tune into the Sebenza Live Behind the Hustle podcast every Tuesday to find out more about what fascinating careers are out there. You can find us on the Sowetan Live website.
Or you can follow us on Twitter on Sebenza Live.
Sebenza boy.
Sebenza girl.
Sebenza.
Yavamdana.
Welcome back to Cargumentative. Guys, in this segment of the show, we're going to talk about South African production specials. So, listeners out there, you might not know, but South Africa has a little bit of a heritage when it comes to making unusual, one-of-a-kind car models, weren't available anywhere else in the world and are unique to South Africa.
Yep.
And, I mean, she's probably started back in the 60s already.
Yeah. There are quite a few.
Yeah. Today, not so much. Today, there's not really.
I don't know of any.
I mean, I think it's down to the fact that we still manufacture cars, not to the extent that we did, but I mean, even the early Porsches, a lot of the 356s were assembled here. They came in knockdown kits and they were assembled by Lindsay Saker.
It was a tax thing.
But the thing is, like, we're talking about special cars, which are not available. I mean, I'm not talking about a Ranger or a Hilux Dakar, you know.
Yeah, you're talking about
a piece of vinyl doesn't make a car, or like a Ford Tracer Tonic. We're not talking about stuff like that. We're talking about proper cars that are different in a way, mechanically or.
So I've got one.
Okay, shoot.
So I bought a car in 1997. It was an Alpha GTV 6 3-liter.
Was your hair peroxided?
No, it was not. I had a ponytail though.
Sick.
Oh, of course you did.
Anyway.
I need a picture of this.
I bought it. It was a runner, but it had a slipping clutch when I bought it. I'm not...
color?
White.
Pinstripe?
So they came in three colors. Red and white were the most popular, and they were like a handful made in gunmetal. So the history of this particular car is...
And what year are we talking about here?
They were produced 84 and 85.
In the 80s.
Yeah.
Do you know who was behind that car, actually?
There were a couple of people.
Roger McCleary, the voice of South African motorsport, and a man called Sumpy Bosman.
Yeah, so I've met Sumpy.
Have you?
Yeah, but I'll tell you how Roger McCleary fits into the picture. So he went to... So basically, Alpha's racing in Group B, I think it's called. Or Group N.
It was Group
N.
Yeah, it was.
Group N, I think. So they're racing, and they were losing to BMW. And they were racing with their 2.5 GTV6. So they needed a bit more power. So Roger McCleary went over to Italy, and this is how the story goes. He spotted a motor that had been kind of wasn't used anymore. It was a 3-liter version of the Busso Alpha V6.
From Alpha Delta?
Yeah, so it had... The crankshaft was breathed on by Auto Delta. The heads were modified because they had to now receive Delorto carbs instead of the fuel injection on the 2.5. So, yeah, it was internally it was a different motor. It could rev a bit higher. And it was properly brought. It had to be homologated. So they had to make over 200 of them for it to be eligible for Group N. So, yeah, they produced these cars, 84 and 85. They had 128 kilowatts, where I think the 2.5 had about 115 standard. So,
and I think the story, I mean, let's give a little bit more details, because as far as I understand, they were assembled in Boysen. So they took the 2.5-liter blocks.
They were assembled in Brits,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they didn't, the engine wasn't anything to do with the 2.5. It was a standalone 3-liter motor, different crank for a longer stroke. It had different heads because the manifold had to be different to receive the carbs.
Were they carb-fed, not injected?
Not the 3-litre was carbs.
Okay.
Carbs, but mated to the same Dedeon...
swing rear axle.
Yeah, swing rear axle with a transaxle, which arguably was the... So the car had 50-50 weight distribution, but the gearbox was a weak point.
Was it a swing axle, or was it just that the gearbox was at the back?
No, it's got the Dedeon, which is like a triangular... Okay. It's like a Samusa.
It looks like one of these.
It looks like a Samusa.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's a special car. It was very neutral handling. It had inboard discs at the back. It had the clutch was on the gearbox at the back. So the weight distribution was its thing. So to fit the airbox for the carbs, they had to develop a new bonnet with a NACA duct.
I was going to ask
which
you,
wasn't those, functional.
Because those had a plastic...
They had a fiberglass bonnet.
Yeah, with a plastic thing on...
No, that was the 2.5 with the gray cover on the top. The 3-liter had like a gray vent cover on the front of the NACA duct, but that wasn't functional. Okay. It actually received its cold air from behind, well, next to the headlights. Yeah, it also received a deeper chin spoiler to cool the car better. So it was a success.
It worked well.
It won its first race, and I think they came first and second in their championship that year.
What was it racing against?
It was racing against the BMW 635.
Okay.
635, yeah. Was it the 635, Mark? Or was it the 735?
Sure.
What have you got?
Well, 745, but we'll get onto that.
No, it was the 735.
Okay.
And the Ford XR8, came in later. So there was another South African special that Ford brought in. They replaced the XR6,
the V6 V8.
With a V8 motor. Now, there were a couple of South African mods that were done in that Group N to try and compete with each other. It was brilliant because it made racing really competitive. And you as the consumer could go out and buy one of these models, which is fantastic.
Yeah, so it would race on a Saturday. Yeah. Buy it on a Monday.
Yeah.
It is a very cool. I mean,
new price is R25,000, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you guys know I'm not the world's biggest Alfa fan, but I do like the GT V6, and I do like the 3-liter version of this.
Yeah.
One. I think it sounds incredible. I don't know if producer Scott has got that little sound clip.
Very unique.
Would that have been a road car likely, or would that have been a race car?
That was a road car.
That was a road car.
Really?
Yeah, was inboard, onboard footage of a road car driving. Incredible.
That's amazing, huh?
Great sounding car, yeah.
So, I mean, like, yeah, it's going to be hard to beat that, and I'm sure we're going to be putting this up in a poll later in the week. But
so what have you brought to the table?
I mean, this is a car that I've recently acquired. I haven't taken delivery of it as yet because it needed some tinkering, but it's a 1986 745 BMW. So the 745 was built overseas as well. And just so we're clear, it's the late 70s all the way through to 87, 88 odd. It's called the E23, so it is a bit sharky looking, a bit of a tank in its day, and they were sold quite plentifully here in the 728, 733, 735 eventually guys. But our one is a 1986 one, which is, I think, the only year of manufacture. And overseas, the 745 had a turbocharged engine.
Mm.
The difference between the South African one and the overseas one is that our one uses the M88 engine which is the same engine from the BMW M1. Now,
it's a really special motor.
I read something on the internet that it's rated one of the top five motors of all time. It's just, it did service in a lot of cars. So it was in the M1, which was a supercar. It was in this car. It was in the E28 M5. So it's a very, very special motor. It funnily enough, is not a 4.5 liter. It's a 3.5 liter straight six.
So named the 745 for fun.
Yeah, I mean, it just had to differentiate it from the thing. Which funny enough, that wasn't common in those days.
Yeah.
And the 745 overseas, as I say, it wasn't what like ours. But interesting, there were a couple of other bits on it. So it had BBS wheels. Which actually so did the GTV 6.
They're compromotives.
Compromotors. They look very similar. Sorry, stand corrected. And it was a hell of a luxurious car. I'm not sure what the price of it new was, but I don't think there was anything that could come
probably
close
like
to it.
20-30 grand.
I think it was quite a bit more than that. I think it was like 70-80. I think it was like
really?
More expensive than a Porsche.
I think a 308 at the time was like 40 grand.
No, I think by 86 they were also like out of 100. But I think, but it had, the luxury was just beyond comparison. The whole dash, and Arwen thankfully still has the original dash fully covered in leather. It really is a massively sumptuous car. When you open up the bonnet, you see that M-Power engine.
With its individual throttle bodies.
And but it's not a road-going 745. But
so
interesting.
You're cheating then?
No, it's not. It's just
so people who are voting in our poll, please know.
No. I mean, I'm actually saying you should vote for your car because, to be honest, it is much more special. But the interesting thing is that the car that you're going to hear is a 745 that raced in Group N in the mid-80s.
Oh, brilliant.
I raced in the Winfield colors. That car was driven by the late, great Tony Viana.
Mm,
and lovely. The interesting thing is that our car is sitting at a workshop at the moment next to that car. They're busy working on the race car, so hopefully we can put, in the next few weeks, we can get some photos of it.
Of the
two cars next to one another.
That'll be nice.
Let's hear it just for the...
Let's do it.
Just for the cheers.
Is that your car or the racing car?
That was the racing car.
Yeah, okay, cool.
That was the racing car. But it just may have convinced me to do a stupid exhaust on it.
Yeah, I think
definitely.
It sounds awesome.
Really cool. Take the silencer off completely.
That is a cool. I mean, I've raced against that actual car, that Winfield car. It's quite a special thing. And I think the doctor's going to have to come up with something.
I've got one for him.
I've got nothing. I think you must take it away,
Thomas. I'll give you one.
Yeah.
Land Rover Defender 2.8.
So I thought about talking about it.
Was that unique to South Africa?
Yeah, it was.
Really, hey?
So in the tiny little period where BMW actually owned Land Rover, where later Rolls-Royce came out of that to BMW, etc. And the Range Rover, one of the Range Rovers was designed completely by BMW, but it was actually a short period of time. In South Africa, with the change of ownership, we got an interesting special. I don't know the background. I don't know who decided to do it. But they took the 2.8-liter straight-six fuel-injected engine out of the E36 328i and put it inside a Land Rover Defender, which prior to that had never had anything other than maximum, like I think a 5-cylinder diesel in it. And very strange choice. I don't know what it is, because if you think about it, it's actually quite a revy, peaky.
Have you driven one?
I haven't.
I've been in one, funnily enough. A friend of mine in Zim.
Okay.
Really?
Yeah.
And I'm fascinated, because it doesn't seem like the correct engine for something as utilitarian as a Defender, but it was South Africa only, and in the end was actually it's the most powerful and fastest official Land Rover Defender ever made, until the most recent sort of heritage V8 thing that came out after production ended.
I think it's really
cool. So that's
cool,
a really interesting thing.
It is. They come up for sale every now and then.
Yeah, and apparently the enthusiasts are very keen on them. And I must
say, it probably doesn't leak any oil.
Yeah.
Well, not out of the engine, but out of everywhere else.
But, interesting. I remember the advert for it. Sorry, and we're going to get onto your majestic car now. But I remember the advert in the car magazines, and it had a picture of it with... And it had flames on the side, painted on the side.
Really?
It was like a hot rod. Yeah, it was cool.
It must be pretty quick. I mean, that engine was a cool engine. Powerful.
But it was flames painted on the side with mud.
Yes. Remember that? Right. Absolutely. It was. Now I remember that.
That was very cool. Back in the days when adverts were still crafted.
Any readers have one? We'd love to drive it. It'd be fascinating.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
Compared to the 2.4
liter. It's the one to have.
Hell, I don't even mind being a passenger in the back.
Oh, okay. Or in the front. Right then. And I have nothing to say about South African motor industry.
Nothing.
No. Not the XR8, not the 333.
No.
Sorry. Yeah. Super Boss.
Yeah.
200 TS.
Yeah.
Come on,
Golf guys. City CTI.
City Golf CTI.
Oh, CTI,
sure.
What a car.
Sure. Yeah, that's absolutely, South
Africa. Your XR8. Wifey had one of those.
She did, yeah, when I met her.
Apparently, there is one in South Africa that still hasn't had the backboard cut to put 659s in.
There is.
Impossible.
Oh, no.
I don't believe
it. We don't believe you, yeah.
No, I can show you pictures.
He's had to go and find the Bugatti 50 Type 57.
So my...
What's yours?
My South African special
is your Materia.
Is special to me.
Oh no.
Because it is my Daihatsu Materia. And did you know that this is probably the last proper South African special, because it was the last one that was actually built to be different from all the other.
But it wasn't built in South Africa though.
Yes it was.
Was it?
So they took a standard
basically
1.5 liter Materia.
A man at Daihatsu South Africa.
What's his name?
I can't tell you. Said I want to inject some fun into the brand. We want to turbocharge some cars. Now they were originally going to go with the smaller hatch, which was the Sirion, and then the Daihatsu Materia came along, and they were like, you know what? That kind of looks like Japanese hot rodish. Like if a Japanese man designer had to go back to the 30s to hot rods, that kind of slam thing, and he drew it.
It does kind of look like
that. Like that. Okay, so they decided, cool, we're gonna ditch the Sirion, we're gonna go for the Materia. So they then got Steve's Auto Clinic on board.
Wow.
Okay, and they said, cool, we're gonna come up with this. We're gonna do the R&D.
Okay.
So what Daihatsu South Africa did is they imported turbo kits from Daihatsu Japan, because overseas and here we had the YRV turbo. So they took that existing bolt-on kit, shipped it over here, and then Steve's Auto Clinic basically set it up, did the R&D, and they would go up and down the Krugersdorp Highway at nighttime with sort of
Not, not breaking the speed limit, obviously.
No, 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 of course not. Just to make sure that it all, you know, everything was 100% with the car. Put in a piggyback computer, and then they added some other stuff.
You buy one of those, do they allow you to choose where you're going to put the scoop on the bonnet?
No.
They just throw it there.
That was the best place.
Was that the best
place? That was the best place. They had to put it in because it's quite tight inside a Materia engine bay. Not that you've ever seen it, but it's quite okay. You know, compact. So
there's an actual intercooler under there.
Well, we've actually covered this car in quite a lot of detail, and I do. And that's actually my favorite episode of Cargumentative ever. So if anyone is interested to go back and listen to it,
they could sell.
How rare is it?
It's very rare. They only made 50 of them.
Oh, wow.
50?
50, and then...
One of the rarest cars in the world.
Yeah, and then at the end of it, Daihatsu Japan said, listen, guys, we don't want this coming out anymore. So they would have built more, but then they said no more.
It's got drum brakes at the back.
Drum brakes. Well, but you don't really need it, you know. I mean, wow. Some cars don't need drum brakes.
I have a sound clip of it.
This thing must sound...
Do you?
Yeah. Is that your nose whistling again?
But no, Thomas, this thing is rare. It's a rare. Local special. Yeah. I mean, it must be worth an absolute fortune.
It's not. It's worth probably about 75,000 rand.
But it's just, when you say it's worth 75,000, it's worth it to you. What could you get for it?
75,000 rand. It is a cool car. I know you guys don't like it, but there's something cool about it that this thing...
We've had no choice but to like
it. In 2009, where companies are so strict about doing things by the book, especially Japanese companies, you know, sort of companies.
For that alone, it's cool.
Yeah.
So, I'll give it that.
So we should go on a road trip in it.
Yeah. We can.
Do an outside broadcast.
I've done many road trips.
They will never see us coming.
So the Materia was sold in different countries and under different names. It was a Daihatsu here. It was a Toyota elsewhere. And in the States, it was a Scion.
And an XB. It was a Subaru as well.
It was also Subaru.
Really?
It was.
But as a Scion.
Subaru Dex.
Oh.
Dex. Ironically, nobody's claiming it.
There's no wiki page for it.
The doctor wants to speak.
As a Scion XB,
yeah.
Thank you, gentlemen. In the States, Scion was supposed to be the Toyota's younger brand, where Lexus was supposed to appeal to the slightly older, more mature gentlemen. So Scion, it was modified a lot. It was expected to be modified. So there's a huge modification industry around that chassis, the Materia. So okay. I suppose it's not without precedent.
Yeah. What size is the engine?
1.5.
Huge.
Turbocharged. Huge. And it's been brilliant. Hasn't given me that.
How many kilowatts is it?
110 kilowatts.
That's quite a lot.
Yeah, 200 newton
meters. My 3-litre GTV only had 128.
Yeah.
So, yeah. All right. Exactly. Okay. How many did your BM have?
280 horsepower. Not bad. Not
it's about 12 kilowatts.
Yeah. About 220 kilowatts. No, it's quite a lot of power.
220 kilowatts?
Yeah, it's a lot of power.
No, man.
Yeah.
Well, please God, it'll be available to drive soon. You know, it's been a while.
It has been a while.
Do you think it's going to make it onto the road ever, Mike? Or?
It has driven in the last 3 months.
Yeah. Okay. Well, good luck.
South African specials. That's all we have time for.
And we're going to be running a poll. I'm sure a page will set up a poll.
So the poll is vote for T Mark for the Alpha GTV6 3-litre.
Yeah, well, let's not make it 3 wins in a row for me.
Yeah. Don't go for the obvious choice, guys.
Well, the obvious choice is probably the Alpha. But anyway, what is yours? The BMW what?
745i.
You put words in my mouth and gave me the Defender 2.0, so I'm not even behind that.
You deserve. You're the only person here who actually, well, kind of owns a Defender.
All right.
And Thomas had the Daihatsu Materia Turbo.
Yep. All right, guys, that's all we have time for in this segment. We're going to take a quick break, and when we get back, we're going to talk about what weapon we're going to pick.
Man, this aircon is racist.
For the latest political news
and in-depth discussion and analysis
on events making headlines in South Africa's socio-political space,
join myself, Amil Amrao, and my comrades from the Sunday Times Politics Desk for our Sunday Times Politics Weekly podcast. You can find new weekly episodes on the Times Live website every Wednesday.
This is not a shame.
Can you please come in?
Welcome back to Cargumentative. Guys, in this segment of the show, It's actually based on a meme which I saw the other day, which you, I think, sent me.
Did I?
Yeah.
I did.
It was a meme, and it was this emotive, beautifully shot photograph of a portion of the Nürburgring with bold, impactful font saying, one lap of the Nürburgring, what car would you choose?
Is it also known as the Nürburgring?
Yeah, it's the Nürburgring.
That's what I said.
Or the Nordkanal.
Hey?
That's okay. You'll be able to replay that the four or five times.
That's what I said.
No, you didn't.
What did I say?
The Nürburgring.
Yeah.
Anyway. Okay, whatever. So one lap, one car.
One lap, one Nadav, car, go. Nürburgring.
It's a difficult one. We were discussing this on our group during the course of the week. We've done it, which helps.
All four of us have driven it.
We've all driven it. And I would say that, and I'll try to keep it quick, but it's amazingly narrow. We've said this before. It's narrower than you think, and the level change, the
elevation,
is just there's no way any video can bring that across. So the thing is, to do one lap, if you're unfamiliar with it, it sounds bizarre, but I think you shouldn't have to concentrate too much on the car. There's so much to concentrate on getting the lap right. There's so much to concentrate about where you're going. It's so easy to overcook it, and have a massive accident. Yeah. There's so much other traffic that you really need to worry about around you, that to have to concentrate on getting lap.
Yeah, but in this thing, we're saying you've got the track to yourself.
There
will be no other traffic.
I still think one lap, you need something that you won't be able to. You don't need to have to master.
You need to feel comfortable in it.
You need to feel comfortable in it, something automatic.
Like an old pair of jeans.
Like an old pair of
something. Get in, feel comfortable, not intimidated, and you don't want something with too much power because it's just going to be wasted.
So, Doc, what are you talking about here?
All right, so something in the league of Cayman R, 907 Cayman R. PDK, you don't have to concentrate. You leave it in auto, you put it in sport, and you go. You'll have the lap of your life. That's my opinion.
Good car, that.
Yeah.
Love Cayman
R. I really don't like it, but that's just me. Okay.
I've never driven it, Tom.
I have. Fantastic car.
You've driven it many times.
I have.
And you've kept saying
that. What's your car of choice, Tom?
What's your car of choice, Tom? So are we getting the guys, so you know how these two are going to be, and then...
So I want a car that I feel comfortable in, like I said. I want good brakes.
Like a Daihatsu Materia.
I don't want a huge amount of power, because I believe that's...
So not a Daihatsu Materia, not a Lexus.
No.
Let's get that out the way.
Exactly. So comfortable, I want it to be rear-wheel drive, because I prefer rear-wheel drive. I do not like front-wheel drive cars on tracks. I want a manual gearbox, because it's Nürburgring, and, you know, kind of old school. I want to have that feel, which is nice. So I'm going to go for a bog standard Toyota 86, because it has everything you need
I knew it.
It's quick enough to go down the straight. Yep. Not intimidating.
Quick enough to go down the straights fast.
And it's great through the corners, low center of gravity, good brakes.
Nice. You're never going to get me to agree.
Excellent.
I have to say, I think it's actually a very good point that Thomas has made. 86 is probably as close as you can get to the Suzukis that we used.
And
they were plenty.
No.
And there will be times on that track where you feel like you're driving the car to its limit, and you've got that nice, you're not going to get carried away.
So
the track's not going to have a chance to get carried away with you.
Sure.
I think it's a good choice. I'm happy with that.
Mm.
Well, it's my turn. And we said we were going to go with something that you were familiar with. There was like an old pair of jeans.
So Koenigsegg for you.
No. So I'm going to go with my Porsche 996 GT3. I think it'll be fantastic on that track. I know it well. I've done two laps of the track already, so I know that like the back of my hand.
Unfortunately, probably have to shell out for some new brake pads.
That's fine. I've just put new ones on.
Oh, have you?
Fine.
Okay.
I'll probably need new tires, though.
New second-hand brake pads?
No.
Or new ones? Okay.
Let's check. So, I think that's the perfect car, I think, for me. I know it well.
Mm.
It's very quick. It's manual. It's visceral. No traction control. What an incredible experience.
Great.
Yeah.
I mean, at least Mark's trying a little bit, but I'm very happy to say that I'm in a room with three very sensible people.
Well, I'm hoping I'm not that sensible.
I think that's how intimidating the ring is, actually.
It is a very intimidating
track. There's no doubt about that.
I think if you'd asked me this question a year ago before I'd been, I think I would have been, GT3 RS, latest 4.0, whatever, go crazy. That's true. I think having been there, it's sort of tempered my...
So there's no doubt that... You need lots and lots and lots of laps to get to grips with that place, and it's going to intimidate you. To be honest, we all drove that Swift, and it intimidated the hell out of us. So I'm saying I'm going to be intimidated no matter what. So I want to drive Stefan Beloff's 956. So I want to go slowly around there, and when I get off, I'm going to go and say to you guys, I just drove Stefan Beloff's 956, which was, up until recently, the fastest car ever around the Nürburgring.
That's right.
At something like 6 minute 13 or something, or 7 minute, 6 minute 50 odd.
You just drive it slowly.
I drive it slowly.
Does that car still exist, though?
I'm sure it does.
But that wasn't, it's around. There are a lot of 956s.
It was crashed.
Well, I'm sure.
You said his personal 956.
One like his.
Well,
I'm just joking.
So there's this.
But I'm saying, like, I'll, can you even imagine the kind of selfie I could get of me sitting in that thing?
It's all about the selfie, Mark.
I think that's fair. That car is still a record holder for the ring. Because the 919 Evo wasn't race homologated.
Okay.
So basically that was a prototype that wasn't homologated for anything, whereas the 956 was a true homologated race car.
And that was done in anger. The lap that they did was in qualifying, I assume.
It was qualifying there.
Are you still going to go for the 86?
Yes, I am.
We'll give you one more turn.
It's fine. Thanks. I've been there. I know that place is not to be trifled with.
Was it raining on your lap? Is that why?
Yeah, it was.
Okay.
Well,
it was raining on your future lap as well.
I had half the lap.
That's why you choose half the power.
And the second half.
Okay.
Was wet, but I want a car that is easy to control, nice, good feel, comfortable.
We drove the Suzuki Swift,
it's actually fantastic. I'll tell you what I'm certain of, though. A road car isn't the car for around there. You actually need a car that's well set up, and an 86 will be. It's the right type of car.
That 86 is very well set. I mean, you've been in an 86 with me.
I say,
and you were very impressed.
It handles incredibly well, but I'm worried about the straights, Thomas. The part between the corners.
Mark, there's not a hell of a lot. There's like one long straight section.
Yeah.
And that's it. Okay. The rest is all just corners.
I'd love to hear from our listeners. What would you guys drive if you had one lap, one car, one lap of the Nürburgring?
Exactly.
You're alone in the ring. The weather's good.
Live the meme and let us know.
Live the meme. I like
Head us up on Cargumentative, at Cargumentative on Instagram.
Yep. And just we got quite a lot of feedback this week on our Instagram page, and we really enjoy it. So please get hold of us. Yeah. Shout at us. Scream at us. Whatever.
Excellent.
We want to hear from you.
Yeah, we do. We also want to have a quick break, so we're going to do that. And when we come back, we are actually going to answer a couple of questions.
Join me, Paul Ash, in a beautiful soundscape as we explore the world in the Sunday Times Travel Podcast. Find it at sundaytimes.co.za.
Welcome back to the final segment of Cargumentative. In this part of the show, we are going to be answering some questions that we actually got from real live listeners. Not actual bots. Yeah, not bots or anything like that. Or my mom.
We didn't make them up.
We didn't make them up.
Well, we don't know what they are.
We don't make things up.
No, we never do that.
Okay, it says here, something for the Cargumentative team. That's us. I'm enjoying the podcasts. I would have liked to hear the team's view on the worst Porsche 2 weeks ago, but you all ducked that one.
So, easy.
So we should answer this one.
It's true.
Porsche 912.
Because everybody hates
absolutely
the cars I drive. It's got. It has to be the 911 SE.
No, that's not at all.
And it has to be the 911.
It's the 912.
Wow, but the SE is one of the greats.
The 912 is writing checks it can't cash. Simple as that.
No, I don't think so.
No.
The 912 is a cool car, and it's in right.
It's my opinion. I'm entitled to it.
Okay, so your opinion is?
Stop shouting at me.
912.
A 901, which is the original 911.
It's got 6 cylinders, Mark.
No, but I'll tell you, the interesting thing with the 901 is that it was massively flawed. It handled terribly. The carbs gave flat spots all over the place.
Part of the character.
Like, I mean, it was definitely the most important car that Porsche ever made. There's no doubt about that. But it started off like very flawed. I mean, think about all the evolution it had to go through in the pre-74s, moving batteries around, moving the wheelbase out. I mean, there was a whole lot of stuff that they had to do.
It's a 911.
So basically,
a 912 is a 911 with a Beetle engine. There can be nothing worse.
Okay, so Mike's going for the 911. You going for the 911?
No, I'm not going for a 911. I'm saying no, the 901.
Which is the first generation 911.
Well, yeah. So a lot of people might say the 914. So that was the 70s car, but I think that they would be wrong. So my opinion is that the worst one of them all is the 924. Because it wasn't destined to be a Porsche.
No.
At the last minute, they swapped it from
neither
being a
was
Volkswagen.
The 914, actually.
It was. It was developed together. They were not going to be a Volkswagen. They were going to be two different cars, but developed together. 924 was going to be a Volkswagen on its own.
It was.
And then they changed it to
yes,
be
it
a
was.
Porsche. And it's horrible. And its transaxle
is
terrible.
It is a horrible car. It has one of the worst interiors ever. My first Porsche was a 944 with a 924 interior. Oh. Awful.
Did it have Pasha?
It was brown. No, it wasn't.
It was just brown.
It was brown. It was like walking into somebody's colon. Brown everywhere.
But that wasn't the car's fault. Yeah, that was the era.
It was chosen by somebody.
It had a period charm to it. But
it could
it
have had Pasha.
So
you chose a 924. Okay.
I'm also choosing the 924. Oh. So, law on average, easy. The worst Porsche that was ever made, listener, 94. Was the Porsche 924.
Actually, to be honest, the 901 was too important. It must be the 924.
Yeah. No, okay. It's a 912.
No.
Moving on. I am also keen to hear if there are any advanced driving schools where you drive your own car and not a Mark-sponsored school, i.e. Merck or Audi or Volkswagen.
So these were all questions from the same listener.
Yeah.
Oh, ooh. Wow. Yeah. Our listeners are very well informed. They are. Well-spoken, too.
Well-spoken man.
Yeah.
Well, I assume it's a man.
I think it's encouraging, and I think it's a good thing to go and do advanced driving courses. I'm not sure about courses that are available, but there are a lot of track days, and you probably could get an instructor relatively easily.
So you can get me, listener, if you would like.
Ah.
I will happily volunteer and
shameless
do you
plug.
Some... Exactly, shameless plug, but I'm a desperate man. And in need of money, so I will happily help you on a track there.
For a fee.
a reasonable fee. I'm not a greedy man. But I could do something like that.
But besides you, Tom, I don't think there are too many that are not organized by the big marks like BMW, Audi, and Mercedes, and Porsche.
There's nothing.
I would be careful there, actually. I mean, you don't really want to be instructing someone and let them damage their cars and be liable for it.
Look, I've done it before as part of the Lotus Club. We have an annual instructor day where people come. We're in their cars, and the drivers in the Lotus Challenge class instruct. And it normally happens at SWAT clubs or Midvol. And it's actually quite exciting to see somebody start off beginning of the day, and they're very slow and unsure and unsure, and then
pushing their limits,
and they get better and better throughout the day.
Brilliant.
And it's actually a really cool thing to do.
So there's something in there. Hire your own tame racing driver.
You can.
Yeah.
There you go.
We do the odd track day. So if you do have an exotic, we do the odd track day, and I've actually gone out as well as an instructor with people in my car, but
Thomas, you know, I can vouch for his driving, and he definitely squeezes those adrenal glands every once in a while.
The South African Stig.
He'll come out
good old beater.
You'll come out excited.
Yeah. So to answer your question, no, I don't think there is actually an advanced driving school that lets you use your own car, because manufacturers like to use their cars to showcase their technology, and that's basically what these things are. It's a showcase for the tech and what the cars can do.
What I can recommend as a course is the Pablo Clark course, which is in a Ferrari 360 Challenge car.
Do you have to go out and push anytime?
No, it's actually. It's pretty good, and you actually get to drive that car really hard.
It's a proper 360
and it's a proper
challenge.
360 Challenge car with air jacks and all those things.
So listeners, when you win the lottery, go for the Pablo Clark Racing School.
Until then, do the Audi one.
Yeah. Or inbox me.
Or inbox Tom Falconer.
Yeah.
Guys, cool. That's all we have in our mailbox. We'd like to have some more in our mailbox. So hook us up or hit us up or whatever it is on at @cargumentative on Instagram. And that's it for the show, guys. Thank you very much for joining me in studio again.
Thanks for having us.
Cheers,
and,
guys.
Be back at the same place, same time next week. From me, Thomas Faulkner. Cheers. Goodbye.